Our justice system in America is broken. Too often, men are condemned to death for crimes they did not commit. Kevin Cooper sits on death row in California for crimes he may be innocent of. The new book, Scapegoat, The Chino Hills Murders and the Framing of Kevin Cooper by author J. Patrick O'Connor asks the question, did the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department frame Kevin Cooper? This riveting new book exposes our broken justice system and the sad reality that some men in America have been and will be executed for crimes they did not commit. Get your copy of Scapegoat, The Chino Hills Murders and the Framing of Kevin Cooper by author J. Patrick O'Connor, available at bookstores everywhere and Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksamillion.com.
Welcome to Authors First on the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone, worldwide. All of the broadcasts available free on demand at artistfirst.com. Be sure to tell everyone in your social network about the broadcast. This hour, we're going to discuss the mafia in real life with Mark Silverman and author Scott Deechy. We've placed their names and the website on our homepage. They're the author of Rogue Monster, Mobster, The Untold Story of Mark Silverman. If you're interested in the mob genre of material, you're certainly at the right place this hour with real-life mobster Mark Silverman. So let's give a warm Artist First welcome to our guest. How do you do, gentlemen?
Great.
I'm doing well.
Thanks for being on Artist First Network and for supporting the arts and the book, Rogue Mobster, The Untold Story of Mark Silverman, available at Amazon.com if you'd like to go there to learn more about our guests this hour. And Scott has a website that I love because it's his name, Scott, DEITCHE.com, to learn more about our authors. Now, both of you collaborated together on this fascinating project.
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah, Mark had given me, had written up a lot of his firsthand accounts of his life and his experiences, and I, helped him kind of formulate it into a really good flowing narrative. And I think between his, the way he described it from a real street level and kind of really bringing it into a nice narrative, it really reads like a novel in a lot of parts. So it was an enjoyable project to do.
Well, we should tell the audience that there is a subtitle that would give explanation. It's The Untold Story of Mark Silverman and the New England Mafia. So those of you in the geography of New England, New Jersey, certainly you would identify with Mark and his story. Mark, this isn't your first undertaking, nor you, Scott, in the area of writing.
No, I've done a few books on, I had started to concentrate on the Tampa Mafia, and I've done a couple books on that, and a general mafia book, and then was approached by Mark, and I thought it was a real fascinating topic because the New England Mafia is really, with the strong Irish influence even through today, it's really kind of a unique situation that you don't find in a lot of the other cities that people think of when they think of the Mafia.
Scott, you're an environmental scientist by trade, therefore a researcher. You think critically, logically, and in an organized fashion at material. Do you believe that all of that brought to bear this ability to probe and to write?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there have been times I found in a number of my projects where, you know, I actually enjoy the research more than the actual art of writing, and there comes a point where you just have to stop the research and get on with the writing, because it's really it's very fascinating, especially when you find little nuggets of information that have never been brought to light before.
How did you come to know Mark?
Well, Mark had contacted me a few years ago after the first couple books had come out on the Tampa Mafia. And, you know, I'd been approached by a lot of people about writing their stories, and a lot of, you know, street-level mob guys that I hadn't really heard about. But Mark had a really interesting story, and I dug into it and verified a lot of what he had to say. And I think it was really interesting because he had a real ringside seat to a lot of this turmoil that was going on in the New England underworld in the 90s, and there really hadn't been a lot written about it. There had been, you know, a few books about Whitey Bulger, but there hadn't been a lot about what was really going on the street level in New England at that time. So, you know, I think it's really a fascinating story. And it gives a reader, you know, that kind of the anti-Godfather view of what it's really like on the street for a lot of these guys.
Thank you, Scott. Now, Mark Silverman, our guest, you spent a number of decades involved with the New England mob, the mafia, a mobster, a gangster, involved in criminal activities you probably don't want to discuss, and hopefully you've forgotten. It's a courageous man, I think. It takes courage to reflect on a decades of past, a childhood, a youth misspent, and to reflect on that today as a mature adult, and the courage to resurrect many of these feelings and involvements. What point did you feel compelled, or and how did you come to know Scott and his material, or to reach out, in other words, to Scott?
Well, what fascinated me about Scott was the fact that he was an expert on the Tampa Mafia. And the Tampa Mafia is, I'm not going to say very similar, but it's one of the smaller families that has its tentacles into New York and across the country, very much like the New England Mafia. So in looking around for certain people, I thought Scott might be the perfect fit because he could understand and actually put it together based on his research of the Tampa mob and the fact that it's, you know, it has its similarities. You know, there's differences, of course, but I figured he was the right guy for the job. And when he said that he wanted to do it with me, it was, we just took off from there, and we collaborated, we got everything together, and he did some tremendous research. I gave him the real life experiences, and he did a lot of the research, a lot of the history, a lot of the stuff that I couldn't give him. You know, I had to give him my real life experiences, and he did a wonderful job. He really did.
Had you read Scott's material? That's where I was driving.
Yeah. I read his first book, I believe it was Cigar City Mafia.
There you go.
And I liked it. I liked it. I liked his writing style, and I thought it would be a good fit.
You know, of course, in popular culture, both Scott, Mark, and I are very familiar with the Soprano series, and it's just funny to me to hear you talk about the subject when they refer to Florida connection and in their series or the entertainment industry and the spiders, the little fingers that go out into so many different fields.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, even with some of these smaller families, even the stuff like Mark was involved in. I mean, there's, you know, he names, you know, professional athletes and a lot of people you wouldn't think that interact with this world, and the tentacles really, really extend all over the place. And
yeah, not,
you know,
just
Grand
Vegas, in other words.
Not what it was.
Yeah, not, we know Vegas.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't think that much of Florida or even New England. Now, when we say New England, Mark, define it.
Well, New England is basically Rhode Island, Federal Hill, Providence, and Boston. But, you know, Vermont, Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, I mean, the Patriarca family had their reach into all of those places. Every portion of New England you could imagine, there was some semblance of a mafia, and it was Patriarca family, the New England family, that controlled those areas.
And as in other parts of the country, certain immigrants settled in certain areas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Italian or Irish or, you know, Polish, whatever. They came in and they settled in particular communities. And I think that became a backbone for mafia activity, did it not?
I would have to agree. I mean, the neighborhoods I can actually say in Massachusetts, I mean, there's predominantly Irish neighborhoods and there's predominantly Italian neighborhoods. And, there's some Jewish neighborhoods, too. But for the most part, it was basically where the people settled in to begin. It just kind of took off. It took on, like, a flair of its own because, like an area like the north end of Boston is an Italian area. Areas like Winter Hill, they're the Irish Mafia area. And, you know, like I said, it's a hodgepodge of gangsters, you know, but mostly Irish and Italian.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Kennedys were bootleggers, let's be honest.
Yeah.
So this is rich, long history in New England. That's where I was driving with my question, audience. I wanted all of you to get the setting of the locale and the history of Boston and the New England states, and where this is the culture out of which Mark Silverman grew up.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting when I went up and visited Mark and saw the neighborhoods he grew up in. You know, it's really, in some of those places like South Boston and Medford, it is like stepping back into the 40s and 50s. You still had these really close, tight-knit neighborhoods where, you know, and most of America has become so mobile, a lot of those old neighborhoods have kind of disappeared, but you still see a lot of that in the Boston area, which I found fascinating just from a purely demographic standpoint.
Makes you wonder how they got those big Cadillacs and Lincolns down the street, doesn't it? Wonder there wasn't any room when you were parking in the road. I mean, you're driving on the sidewalk. And, of course, today the vehicles are a little matchbox, right? We get three in a place where there would be one.
Yeah.
Well, it's great that you two were able to then meet face-to-face, right, Scott?
Yeah, I went up there and spent a little time with Mark and, interviewed him a little bit more. But really, I wanted to get a flavor. One thing I think is important with a writer, even though I might not even write about it, is going to a place I'm writing about just to get a feel for what it's like. I think that really, it does me well as a writer in trying to really gather the spirit of what Mark's telling me and put it in a narrative that really captures the essence of not only Mark, but the places he's describing.
Very good. How much time did you have then? Was it a weekend or a week or a month?
Yeah, I think it was a long weekend. I went up there for spent some time and like to get back up there and maybe do a little promotional stuff as well. But we talked all the time and talked email back and forth and shot ideas off each other a lot. So,
wow, what time frame or did you or should I say what ground rules did you establish in creating the book? Rogue Mobster, The Untold Story of Mark Silverman and the New England Mafia, available at Amazon.com. And, of course, I have my apps for Amazon on my Android. And if you are interested, know others interested in listening on their Android phone, you can do that through TuneIn.com. And I'd like to welcome all of our listeners from TuneIn.com. And our service personnel, we have listeners all over Afghanistan and Europe. Thank you for joining us for the interview this hour. Be sure to share the content on all of your social network sites. And thank you for our special guests for joining us, Mark Silverman and also co-author Scott Deitch. And it's D-E-I-T-C-H-E, so Deitch E. Would be fine, but we have the link on artistfirst.com. Just click through, and you can learn more about our guest and the book. So this first meeting, this encounter, you had already covered a lot of ground rules, I imagine, that led to the culmination of saying, hey, we'll work together. We can collaborate on this deal.
Yeah, from my perspective as an author, and then you know, Mark can give his side of that. You know, I wanted it, number one, you want to make sure everything Mark tells you, Mark's comfortable with going in the book, but also that it's backed up for something. You know, you really got to be careful in saying, hey, that guy, you know, I suspect that guy was a mobster. But, you know, you want to make sure you can back stuff up and that we have, you know, sources of documentation and other anecdotal first-person sources to back up a lot of what Mark's saying. And wanted to make sure that he was comfortable in revealing what he wanted to. So, that you know, those were really the big rules. And, you know, obviously putting that all in an agreement. But, you know, I think we were pretty much on the same page from the beginning, which made it really easy.
I would imagine, Mark, that any one of your involvements could be a book in and of itself. Probably a lot of material available. Is that why you wanted a co-author, you wanted Scott to assist in this project?
Well, yeah. I mean, I could formulate the ideas. I could tell the stories, but, you know, I'm really not an author. I mean, I can write, but, you know, I needed professional help, and that's where Scott really helped me out. You know, a lot of mob guys that write books have a co-author because they're in the same predicament as me, where they got the stories, they got the experience, but they need someone to help them put the pen to paper. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. You're more involved in doing heavy lifting, but not of this sort. So
right.
I think that is tremendous of you to and the way you two have just worked together, it's pretty flawless of a book, audience. It would be hard to say who wrote what. It's very well written. It's available in paperback also, or hard copy. So go to Amazon.com and get your copy right away. You'll thoroughly enjoy it, and especially the social network sites today. Those of you interested in mobster true life stories, this is a must read. Mark, did you begin chronologically in telling the story?
Yeah, I did. I tried to just tell the stories in the chronological order from childhood to adolescence to mobster and so forth and so on. And, you know, there were times where, you know, some of the stories were very confusing. And Scott had to help me, and I had to help him actually make sure that we could get them and make other people understand them. Because it's very difficult for a guy in my position to write his memoirs. I mean, it's something I'm not used to being, I don't like to write. I don't like to talk on phones. I don't like to talk, you know, correspond on computers. But it was very difficult to bring me out of my shell. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, because you were living a covert life,
right?
Outside of the conventional day-to-day frame of reference we all live in today,
right?
And that makes you a different person and skeptical of everything. Now, were there also layers of individuals, in other words, where rules were coming from this person, and then that person was playing a role, and then someone else? Is that the type of complexity you're referring to?
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of recurring characters where one character may begin in 1992, and he might not come back into the story until maybe 1997.
Right.
And then he may not reappear again. And then you could go back and say, well, this guy keeps reoccurring. So the chronological order, like I said, was very confusing. But, you know, I did the best I could, and Scott really helped me with that. He really did a good job, and I'm happy with the results.
Mark, did you describe your own family background, your parents, your neighbors, what brought you into the mob lifestyle from the beginning? Did you touch on any of that?
Yeah, I covered a lot of that. Chapter 2 covers a lot of that. And I grew up without a father. And I grew up in an Irish neighborhood called Winter Hill, and I did things that I didn't have a lot of male guidance, so to speak. So I was kind of running wild at a young age. I didn't, you know, I had to grow up fast too because, you know, my mother was trying to support myself and my brother, and I felt like I had to be the man of the family and take care of her and try to take care of my brother, even though he's older. But, you know, unsupervised time and my mother working all the time, I mean, that kind of led me into down the path that I went down.
Yeah, let's make a quick buck. What was your first criminal act?
Well, my first criminal act was dealing drugs on a high level. I skipped the beginner's course on that. I went right for the top on that.
And, right for the big money, the big buck. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I was above all else in my life since day one. I've been an earner. I've been a moneymaker. And, you know, whatever it takes to do that, I did.
Yeah, and then, you know, of course, that exposed you to the type of criminal that found you of value.
Well, yeah, that opened up a lot of eyes. I mean, that got me a lot of attention, and it got me a lot of unwanted attention. I mean, people want what you have, you know? I mean, some people want to work with you, and some people want to work against you. But sure, that's what did it. That's what opened up some eyes. That's what got me noticed.
Now, were people being killed as today with involving drugs? Were there documented newspaper-type information about activity that you would have been involved with?
Well, during the time frame of my story, there were over two dozen guys that got murdered. I mean, those are the documented ones. I mean, God knows how many more there may have been. I mean, I don't know. But I'm sure there's a lot more. And even today as we speak, you know, if I had to guess, I would say that the New England Mafia is certainly not down and out. And they're probably still very active.
In quote-unquote legit.
Well, I don't know if I'd use the word legit, but, you know, I mean, This is something that I don't know if it's ever going to die. I don't know if it's going to go by way of the dinosaur. I really don't, because, I mean, there's news stories that come out as of last week where, you know, high-up capo regimes are flipping and working for the government. I mean, that's a story that just came out last week. The sanctioned New England Mafia boss, he was indicted in 2010 in that big mafia roundup of 120 suspects in New York and New England, and it was the biggest mafia bust in history. That was just 2 years ago. So what I'm trying to say is that some guys have gone legitimate, but for the most part, I mean, this is a lifelong thing. And I don't know if society really understands that, and I really don't know what drives us to put so much of our lives into it. Maybe we don't know anything else. I don't know. But, you know, if you're an engineer, you're probably going to be an engineer until you retire. If you're a mobster, you're going to probably be a mobster until you either go to prison for life or they take you away in a pine box. I mean, it's that simple.
When you're fleshing out details for a book of this nature, you do have access to public information, newspaper articles of the time that were written up about certain personalities. Were any of those details needed for the book?
Scott, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think so. I think, there's Mark, like you said, when he was doing his stuff, there were bodies fallen around him that really didn't necessarily have anything to do with him, but were part of the larger picture. So we were bringing in some of those details of what was going on. Basically, you had two different factions in the local mafia that were gunning for power. Bringing a lot of public information to supplement the story was real helpful in giving the full picture, and I think it really smoothed out the narrative.
It does. It gives historical context and validity to the story.
Exactly.
In other words, Mark, he's reflecting. He's trying to remember. There's all kinds of things going on, right? That if I can get close to a year and name a couple names, then as a researcher, I can go through the verification process and perhaps find some other court documents, trials, jail time spent, you know, information, background.
Yeah. I mean, you can't remember everything like anyone else. So, but Mark really did have a very good memory on a lot of events. And, you know, we really worked together on narrowing some stuff down to specific dates. But, I mean, to be honest, Mark really fed me a lot of great information that it wasn't that difficult to get the corroborating evidence and do the research for. So he had a really good mind for not only events, but the important events that would really help the book.
And all of that adds tremendous credibility to both of you and to the reader, to have a setting, a place where they can, you know, put their thoughts in a year, in a location.
Sure.
And that adds all the believability to the process of writing a book. And, Mark, you've already stated you're happy.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy with the results, absolutely.
You know, there are kings and queens who've written biographies that aren't so happy, okay?
Maybe I won't be so happy, I don't know, but so far I am.
And there's the official and the unofficial documents. The selective process, was that difficult for both of you? This could have been a massive book, or maybe two or three, or maybe that's what you've decided.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that Mark told me that were fascinating stories and, you know, just didn't fit into the book. Not that they weren't important, not that they weren't great stories, but they were just kind of, you know, kind of segues off to the side, little things that he did that we left out because if you did, it would have gotten too unwieldy, I think, and I think Mark would back me up on that, but we really tried hard to get the most important things in that not only serve Mark's recollection of the events, but also serve the narrative.
Yeah, and of course, certain periods of Mark's life were probably accented with a lot more mafia mobster activity than early in his career.
Yeah, and there are certain years, like we'll spend two or three chapters on a year, then blow through three or four in a half a chapter. It's, you know, the nature of the business he was in and the ebb and flow of guys on the street and what's going on.
Right. Now, your name, Mark Silverman, if you do a Google and you Mark Silverman, my God, there's all kinds of Mark Silvermans. What a great name to have. I made the same decision with my name, Tony K, K-A-Y, because you go to the internet and there's just kabillions of famous K-A-Ys. So is this your real name? You don't have to tell us, but curious if it was a pen name?
No, this is my real name. And very quickly, at the age of 18, when I graduated high school, I had the choice because, as I said, I grew up without a father. And my mother gave me the option at the age of 18 to change my name to the family name, which is Italian. And I said no. I was going to keep the name that I had. And I can tell you one thing. If I had changed it to the Italian family name, it probably would have been a lot easier for me in my chosen profession. It's very hard with a Jewish last name to get to the places where I got to within the mafia.
Wow. Except for those who knew, of course.
Sure. I mean, when you read the book, you'll see, too, that having the last name that I did have may have actually benefited me.
Saved your life.
Well, yeah, it was deceptive. It was, you know, what are we going to do with this guy? You know, I mean, was he with the Irish? Is he with the Italians? Is he, you know, should we put him in Israel? I mean, I got it all the time. But it just opened up other avenues because in the mafia, it's very difficult to operate with a Jewish last name. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's an Italian and an Irish world, you know. And like I said, at first, as I told you, it was a detriment to me. I thought it was going to bring me down. I thought it was going to make it so I wouldn't be able to rise. But in hindsight, it actually turned out to be a pretty good thing.
Mark, Scott, why write this book now?
I think the timing's right. I think people need to know right now, too, that there's more than just Whitey Bulger when it comes to the Boston and New England Mafia. There's more. And I think people need to see the other side of it. And Bulger's a fascinating figure. Don't get me wrong. A lot of books been written on him. A lot of press coverage over the years. One of the biggest scandals in U.S. history with the FBI. But my story kind of plays off of that. I mean, we do have a lot of Bulger stuff, but you'll realize, too, that my story is actually played off of Bulger and that generation. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of difficult to explain, but I think the timing's right. I think the timing was right for the book to come out now.
Yeah, and I think that if I could just add on to that, when Mark first approached me, in the years since he first contacted me about doing this book, you've had massive busts in Boston of guys who are in the book, just a recent cases in Providence with New England Mafia guys, another FBI scandal in Boston with another mobster last year, the arrest this past year of not only Whitey Bulger, but Enrico Ponzo, who was living in hiding for a number of years, another Boston mobster. So, you know, since Mark's come to me, there's been this huge amount of renewed interest in stories about Boston, not to mention The Departed had come out in the interim since we had started working on this project. So, you know, in terms of timing, it ended up being a really good timing as the Boston mob came back into the news for all these various reasons. And none of these, and Mark's story still has not been told, and it really undercuts a lot of what's been going on up there. So I think it's perfect timing.
Scott,
yeah,
there's
another scandal that's going to be coming out, and Scott kind of alluded to it, where they're saying that a real powerhouse in the family for many, many years has actually been working with the government since 1992. And they just reined him in, what, Scott, a year and a half ago, a year ago, this came out, not even?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, you know, did the FBI learn from the first fiasco with Bulger, or did they just repeat it? Because it seemed like history repeated itself, because there seems to be indisputable evidence that there's others besides Bulger that have been long-time not only cooperatives or informants with the government, but long-time partners with the government, like they say that Bulger was.
Well, the public interest in the mafia, mobsters, there's no end to the appetite, that's for sure. Did either of you envision that perhaps the content would be suitable for a movie?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, the hope. You're always like, wow, make a really good movie. Realistically, you know, I've had a little bit of dealings with production company stuff. That's kind of a whole different ballgame there. But, you know, as I said before, I think people looking to read the kind of book that you can make into a movie, a nonfiction book that is really reads like a novel and just, you know, doesn't plot down in any parts and really keeps the reader going, you know, Mark's book definitely fits that bill.
Well, and also your skill, as Mark
yeah,
stated.
Scott brings the character.
Yeah, forward. I mean, you're no novice when it comes to investigating mobster activity and the mafia, and I believe it's just tremendous wisdom on Mark's behalf to solicit you, and this is a fabulous book. The cover, very attractive. Tell us about the publishing process. I know that authors and have different ideas about the method to be used. Together, what did you decide?
Yeah, we had tried a couple larger, you know, I've been published by large and smaller houses, and there was a couple bites. We had a contract that fell through. And that was totally in terms of they wanted the book to go one way, which neither Mark or I thought would work. And we said, no, I don't think that's going to work. So he came upon Strategic about a year ago, and they kind of gave us the artistic freedom, and you know, were really supportive and loved the book the way it was. So it was a natural choice for us to go that direction.
Yeah, that was the key, Scott. That was the key, and you hit the nail on the head with that. Is that, you know, some of the larger publishing houses that were interested, they weren't going to give us the creative influence that we needed. They wanted us to tailor a book a certain way, and you know, we just weren't going to do it. I wasn't going to sell out in any way either. I mean, this is the story needed to be told in a certain way, and Strategic gave us the opportunity to do that.
The 90s, fascinating period. What is that now, 22 years ago? I wouldn't mind going back a couple decades. And was that fun to think about that period of your life, young, adventurous, lots of things going on, Mark?
Yeah, I wish I could go back sometimes. I had a great time in the 90s. And, you know, not only was it was a learning experience. You're right, it was a different time. There was, you know, the early 90s, there wasn't an internet, there wasn't... you know, there wasn't the technology there was today. I mean, it was a different era, and nothing like it is today. But yeah, I wish I could go back sometimes.
Yeah, you could actually find a cell phone.
Yeah, that's one thing too that attracted me to the project. Also, is that Mark is from the same generation as me. We're only a couple of years apart, so his experiences resonated with me in terms of, you know, the timeline and growing up in the same eras. So.
Yeah, who had a cell phone? You could still go to the corner gas station and use the pay phone.
Yeah. I preferred it that way.
Where'd those go?
Yeah, I preferred it that way, believe me. Cell phones are not a monster's friend, believe me.
So those interested in 90s memorabilia culture, reflecting on that period perhaps in their own lives, there's lots of things here to identify with.
Sure. We even bring it up into the early 2000s, all the way up to 2005. So, I mean, we cover a range of, my personal range was basically from 89 to where we brought it up to 2005, as far as the story goes, as far as what I was willing to write, as far as the stories I was willing to share. And so it's not just the 90s, but that's where a lot of the good stuff came out. A lot of the that's where there was a vicious war going on in the New England Mafia, which is obviously the most the most attractive part of the book, I would think.
Yeah, and because that's the untold story.
Yeah,
audience, we've skirted all around that during this hour, and I'd like to thank Mark Silverman and Scott for being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kaye in the studio. So many questions, so little time. Be sure to visit the website, buy the book. You'll find out the untold story. Without giving away too much, go ahead, Mark, and give our audience a glimpse.
Well, it's the story of divide and conquer. It's the story of a mobster's journey in the underworld, you know, from the time he was wet behind the ears to the time where he was groomed to the time where he learned the game and to the times when I wasn't sure I was going to survive. There was times when it was a very, very dangerous life, a life that when I look back on it and I reflect, I say sometimes, you know, why did I do it? You know, it was just crazy times, crazy times.
Near misses to death? Those close to you who you may have viewed as brothers being murdered?
Absolutely. And vice versa. I mean, there's, you know, I'm not going to say that guys didn't try to do that to me. I mean, that's what comes with the game. I mean, that's the life of a wise guy. That's the way it goes. You know, I mean, I will say one thing. In the mob, sometimes you attract unwanted attention, because when you come right down to it, every other mobster out there wants what they think you have. And it's your job to show them what you want them to see and never let them take it from you. And they can take it from you in one of two ways. They can either feed you to the government or they can end your life. So those are the two things that I always kept in my head throughout my entire time on the street, was this is the way the game works. Everybody's chasing the same dollar out there. And if you're in the way, those smarter guys, the guys that know the game, they're going to rock you to sleep, and they're going to try to take it from you. You can't allow that to happen. And you got to do some taking of your own on the way. And that's the life.
Mark Silverman, when did the day end for you? How did you make that exit?
Well, I started getting into some legitimate businesses in right around 2005, 2006. And, you know, one thing is that you may not be actively racketeering, whatever the phrase, whatever, however you want to describe it, but you're basically always going to be a mobster, because I still live in the same neighborhood. You know, it's still in me. It's something that will never, it's just always going to be in me. And that's pretty much the way it goes. You know, it's the sins of my past, I'll never be able to escape them. I'll never be able to run from them, and I don't want to run from them. This is what I've done. This is what other guys did. This is the way it is. Whatever I choose to do in my future, people will always know me as a guy that was a street guy. So I'm always going to be labeled that. And like I said, when I walk out my door, when I walk down the street, you know, people don't know. People don't know what I'm doing. And someday you might run into the wrong guy, or, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm making that point clear, but if you understand it, that's pretty much what I'm saying.
Scott, this has been a lot of fun for you as a researcher, interested in the topic and having such a dynamic person to work with in Mark Silverman. Do you think you'll both collaborate again?
I'll never say never. Scott?
No, yeah. I mean, it's always possibilities of stuff in the future, certainly. And you know, I think this book is going to have some legs down the line. And, you know, there's some other stuff Mark's not told. And there's a lot of other good New England stories that have never been written. So, you know, maybe it'll be a continuation of Mark's experiences, or maybe just a straight, you know, book expand out some other areas in New England. So I think there's definitely some opportunities down the line.
Gentlemen, the internet has changed the way authors can reach an audience. Thank you, everyone worldwide, for joining the broadcast this hour. Tony Kay in the studio for Authors First. The broadcast will be converted to MP3 format, available free on demand from the site. Be sure to tell everyone you know on your social networks to get their copy of the interview today, and of course to buy the book. The links provided on our homepage for the book. Also, be sure to check out Scott, DEITCHE.com, the co-author with Mark Silverman. Scott, thanks for being our guest and for adding that professional polish to a very fine manuscript. Will the internet be playing a key role in the method of selling the book? Will you be involved in book signings, speaking engagements? Where do you two see yourselves in promoting the project?
Yeah, I've you know, it's funny, since 2004, when my first book came out, that has changed so dramatically. So, you know, now Twitter, Facebook, obviously, Tumblr playing huge roles in how you get your name out. We've been doing, you know, radio programs like yours that are fantastic, because, you know, you don't need to be in the city where the station is. And we've been doing doing stuff like that. And, you know, and I think not only the traditional book signings, but there's this whole new world of virtual book signings and doing a lot more internet-based marketing that I think has the opportunity to reach a lot more people. So, yeah, we have quite a bit of PR set up to be doing that, as well as, you know, still not neglecting the traditional going into bookstores and shaking hands, signing books, and, you know, talking to newspapers and stuff. But, yeah, for sure, you know, the internet. I mean, Mark and I are both on Twitter all the time promoting, you know, like, our appearance today and all our appearances. So,
special thanks to hosts of Crime Beat on ArtistFirst.com, Ron Chipsick and Will Harib, for introducing Mark Silverman to our network. Congratulations on their excellent broadcast. If you're interested, audience, of course, in mobsters, mafia, and the criminal mind, you'll want to listen to the broadcast on Crime Beat right here on the Artist First Radio Network. Our time has moved quickly, gentlemen. Any closing remarks to our audience or anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to?
Yeah, just hello to everyone listening, my family. And, again, a shout-out also to Ron Chepsiak, who really helped us get this project moving. He was really instrumental in taking it to where it is now.
I'd say I share the same sentiments. My family, my friends, and absolutely, Ron Chepsiak he really knows his stuff, and he's really been helpful. I appreciate it.
Consult the ArtistFirst.com homepage regularly for new broadcasts, weekly shows, and upcoming guests. Thanks for listening, everyone worldwide. Stay tuned for more good programming right here at the ArtistFirst Radio Network.